and welcome to the last episode of Season 4 of Coming Out Stories for 2022. It's made by What Goes On Media and hosted by me, Emma Goldswell. If you're new to us, then hi. We basically do what we say on the tin. We bring you incredible stories from LGBTQ plus people from right across the globe. As well as this podcast, we also have a book out, also called Coming Out Stories, which is available in all good bookstores. This episode, you'll meet someone who had to go to extraordinary lengths to hide their same-sex relationship because they lived in a country where it's illegal to be gay. Yo-Yo moved to Ireland in 2021, but is originally from Malaysia. Oh, and this episode is also extraordinary for another reason. It's the first time the recording had to be halted because we got evacuated because of a fire halfway through. Yes, really. Keep listening. So, just to point out, we are recording this on a hillside overlooking Llandudno Bay at Elfest Lesbian Festival. So if there's screaming children in the background, or music, or tractors, or llamas, that's why. But yes, thrilled to introduce my next guest. Do you want to introduce yourself?
My name is Yo-Yo. I'm originally from Malaysia. I just moved to Ireland, Republic of Ireland, in July 2021, in the midst of pandemic. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It sounds like you're going to have quite a story and been on quite a journey then.
Oh, my God. Yeah, tell me about it.
And I'm excited to hear a bit about Malaysia and what it was like growing up there, because I think you're our first guest from Malaysia. So welcome.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, wow. Represent Malaysia.
So generally speaking, what is it like for LGBT people in Malaysia?
Well, it's still illegal to be, it's punishable by law, and we have two law systems. One is Sharia law, because Malaysia is majority Muslim country, and there's also federal law. So both institutions have laws that punish LGBT in different ways. For example, like if you're wearing attire that is presenting the other gender, or if you have an anal sex that is like 377. Actually, it came from British left Malaysia from in 1957, but then Wahhabism, which is like the Middle East or Islamic religion, start to come very strongly. So it's kind of like convenient, because like, oh yes, Muslim kind of like, oh yeah, we support that law, even though they're like also anti-colonization and things like that. So that's what's happening right now. The interesting thing that happened last year, when an orgy, a gay man orgy, was busted last year, and it was caught by Islamic religious authorities. It went to court, and they were punished under Section 28, and then it was Sharia law. And then one guy from the group actually fought the law. He uses federal law, because any laws should go bypass parliament. It should be debatable before it become a law. And then he won.
And he won. So he didn't get prosecuted. He didn't get put in prison or anything.
Out of seven of them, well, three, four of them has already been through the punishment, but when his time and the guys after that didn't get it. But even so, it already harmed their livelihood. Like, for example, some people work in the public sector, and some people already married. And, you know, and this is all like in a circle, like they got married because they are society and stuff, right? Or maybe they are bisexual, like, you know. But still, they lose their jobs and things like that, you know, trauma.
So is it still illegal now, though? Yes.
It is still illegal, because after that, the Islamic NGO fought the case by using federal law, which is 377, which is harder, which is even worse. Yeah. So now,
so you could still be put into prison for being gay.
You could.
Well, let's talk about you then, in your experiences. How do you identify then?
I'm a lesbian. Okay. I found out I was gay when I was 14. Actually, I was in a boarding school, which is a science boarding school, but it's a co-ed boarding school, but it's also very strong in religion. It's not so different from any other countries. You have schools that actually teach Christianity in school, something like that. So same thing in the school that I went with. This was a boarding school, so it was a bit harder. So no one to talk to from I was 14, and I was...
So what happened? Did you have a crush on someone at school?
Yeah, I had a crush on this girl who ended up being my girlfriend after I left school. it was in the early 2000s, so internet wasn't very, you know, binary was very strong, you know, and less people to talk to. So me and my partner, ex-partner, didn't have anyone to talk to, so we kind of like figure out ourselves. But at the start, it was very weird because we're like friends, you know, but it was like all the languages were different. And there was this one time we keep sending letters to each other because we didn't have phones in boarding school. Yeah. And it was early 2000. So we keep sending letters, and one of our letters got caught by warden. Oh. Because someone, her friend, actually found out there was something going on between us. So she was actually the delivery person, but she didn't want to be an accomplice in a way. But luckily,
so she knew something was going on, so she turned snitch from being delivery woman.
There is another thing. Snitching is quite, you know. And then, but lucky for us, the letter was not that obvious. Because we're queer, we're smart, right? Yeah. We turn all the letters to quotes. So we wrote each other letters in quotes.
This is like Anne Lister's diaries from the 18th century.
So for example, an E's envelope, right? So we have like a simple icon, like an envelope, an umbrella, U. So we just have a simple icon of umbrella, you know? So I still keep that letters, not because I reminisce, you know, my love for her or whatever, but how difficult it was and how smart I think we were trying to talk to each other, you know.
So how did you write I love you in code then?
Sorry,
how did you write I love you in code? Can you remember?
I can't remember. I remember love. Yeah. L was lips, so it's like lips. O was, I can't remember, was a donut, I think.
Yeah
V, I can't remember. E is an envelope, so V, I can't remember, so something like that. So you know, so when I read, like, we kind of like know how to read it without the, alphabetical.
So, I mean, we're laughing now, but you did it from a place of being scared, I guess. Mm,
yeah, it was very terrible because even me and her at the time, we didn't understand what it was. Because I always thought I was straight and she always thought she was straight. She's, you know, she's more like femme presenting, so boys were always like after her and stuff, so it was easy for her to have a boyfriend and things like that. So she did have a boyfriend at the time, and also at the same time with me, so that went on for 8 years.
What, your relationship?
Yeah, so that was my first relationship. And then thinking back now, which happened like 15 years ago, it's quite sad to know that that is the longest part of my youth, and that's what my first relationship experience was, because it was kept in the hidden.
Totally secret. Yeah. And you said that she was very femme, and presumably you were less so. Did people clock that? Did people think that you were gay? Did you get any bullying or name calling?
Yeah, there was this one night. We have this thing where at night we will go to the food hall, so to study. Yeah. And that one night I noticed her dorm mates weren't there. All her dorm mates weren't there, including her. And then I clocked like something was wrong. And the next day, she told me that seniors from the Islamic groups told them to be careful of me because I might be lesbian. And they were like, and I was like, when I think about it, they didn't think that I was also 14. And, you know, I was also discovering myself. Like, I didn't know what the hell was that. But because I guess my hair was shorter and I was a bit, you know, boyish. So they thought that I'm the one who's like, you know,
gonna lead them all astray and get them all in trouble.
I'm gonna make all the girls lesbians or whatever.
You wish.
Yeah, and then the next day I ran away from my boarding school. I still remember. Okay. I wrote in my diary, it was like, how dare they call me lesbian, you know, that kind of shit. I was also in denial. That's the thing. Yeah. That's how difficult the time was, you know. And then
but that's amazing how it's thought of, that they weren't going to support you or help you or talk you through it. They were going to literally talk about you and warn people away from you.
Oh yeah, so the counsellor, so my dad died when I was 5 and my mom never remarried and things like that, so she was asking me about like, oh, so what does your dad do? And I said my dad died when I was 5 and what your mom do? And my mom is a clerk in a university and things like that. Oh, this must be because you don't have a dad growing up, you know, things like that. So I was like, oh, you just pull anything to be the reason that I'm gay, you know, probably, maybe, I don't know. But you know, so there was no good positive conversation around it and things like that. So it was really hard. And coming out, I have to come out with a lot of people. Like, for example, the friends in university, they are nice. They are straight girls, you know. They are very close to me. They know me first before they found out, like, I was queer or whatever. So I guess that makes it easy because they already knew my way of who I am. And then after I told them, and then to them it's like, okay, you know, instead of like we don't know each other and then someone told them, oh, Yo-Yo is a lesbian, do you know that, you know,
yeah, so it was obviously far too dangerous for you to come out of school, so you waited till university.
Yeah, so in university then only me and my first partner like we admit that, well, now 6 years later, like it cannot be like, you know, like friends, you know. So that's the time she found her freedom a bit, and I found her, my freedom a little bit. And she studied in a university where my mom works, so my mom has like the car sticker, so I can go in and out whenever I want. Yeah. So I can just like meet her and just sleep over, and then, you know, things like that. Yeah.
So that was the bit of freedom. But as you said, 6 years into the relationship, you were starting to tell people that you were a couple. So there's none of what we have in the West where you might go and walk hand in hand in the streets. But wouldn't even think about it.
You know what? Sometimes we do, but whenever we feel like it's convenient. For example, when you cross the road. Or like
clever.
The time when people feel like, oh, they're just best friends, you know. Shit. Yeah, but her boyfriend at the time also found out about me. She's the only child, and she has her mom, only her mom. So it's one of those things where she doesn't want to upset her mom and things like that. So she kept her boyfriend and things like that, you know.
So and meanwhile, did the boyfriend know? Didn't know about you either.
But how
did you feel about having a girlfriend that also had a boyfriend? That must have been a bit weird.
Yeah, because it's weird because she was with me all the time. That's when I felt like, you know, I was young as well and stupid. Yeah. And I thought, I was like, I'm winning, you know. Because she was with me all the time, and whenever she has something to talk about, she would talk to me. But there was this one time she had to go out like once a month with the boyfriend just to, like, you know, refresh, you know. Yeah, yeah, things like that.
Feel jealous then?
Oh, once in a while, yes. Like we will have good time, and then we don't talk about it and things like that. And suddenly I was like, you know, that has to come up, you know, at one point. So that's when that happened. After a few times, we decided, she actually broke up with me and the boyfriend at the same time. So it's like, I'm done with both of you.
She was having a bad day. Yeah.
I know, right? I was like, oh, so hard. Like, two people love me so much, you know, that kind of shit. Yeah, and then she married her medical officer, like, a year after that.
What, male or female?
Male.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she probably was bisexual then.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. And it's really hard. It's really hard. I totally get her, you know. If she's the only child and her dad left and her mom, she's like, you know, her mom's only best friend and things like that, she would choose her mom. I don't know, like, but I hope her well. Yeah. I know she has two kids now, so
gosh.
Yeah, so that went on for 8 years before we finally broke up, and it was really hard because that was my teenage life, 14 years, and I never liked anyone else. So it's like a new life, you know, after that.
So what was it like being single in Malaysia then, and being in your 20s presumably, and not knowing what to do?
I think it's very nice now because we have all these apps and all these parties, you know. Even though it's legal in Malaysia, we have a lot of underground parties, like the drag queens have theirs, and well, my partner and I, we have a social center back in Malaysia. So you will not find it, we don't have internet footprint, but it went through word by mouth. So what we do, we have once a month music, drag, comedy, poetry, and activities talk.
And this is for the LGBT community. Whereabouts is it?
It's in Petaling Jaya. I can't say where it is exactly.
No, top secret. Yeah. Exactly. If you know, you know. Don't worry.
So how it works is if someone add us on, well, our Facebook and Instagram, all that is private. So if someone add us, we will ask them, like, do you know anyone in the community that can vouch you? Yeah. And then they will say this person, and we go to that person. Is this person safe to be? Yes. Okay, then we get in. Yeah. But I know it's a bit discriminatory to someone who's new, doesn't have friends.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're just like, we use our guts, you know, if look at the contents or whatever. And sometimes we say like, do you want to meet us somewhere and just talk about it? And it's really hard. We have to do it.
So is it dangerous running something like that? So you're essentially running an LGBT community centre in a country where it's illegal to be gay. Mm. So what are the risks? You could be in trouble.
Well, I can be caned. I can be jailed. I can be in court. Yeah. No one wants to go through that. That's why we also protect our community. You know, not just us, there are also other parties and meetups, even like shelter and things like that. So we all have to like cover up and we help each other. Like, for example, someone texts us like, hey, there's this Syrian gay man who's just arrived or whatever. So we know, like, once we heard, we know who to send it to.
I mean, you must have helped so many LGBT people then, because that's a real lifeline, isn't it, literally? Because they can't just go on the gay apps, or they can't just go and go to an open gay club. It doesn't happen.
No, that's why I feel like it's important to have the meetups things, because then your network grows and like you know what people need. Like, for example, like we didn't know that we have such big Middle East lesbian community until we had like multiple shows and they come over, because there's no other spaces, right? So they come over and then we're like, oh, okay, so the community is big. So even in the Middle East community, there's like Syrian, they have Saudi Arabia, you know.
Gosh, yeah, all difficult places to be gay. So back to you anyway then, did you come out to your mum at all? Did you manage to come out to any family?
Yeah, I did come out to my mum like at least 3 times. Like, she conveniently forgot about it, you know. Like the first time I was just trying to explain to her like, mom, remember when I used to take your car, drove your car and never put back the petrol? That was because I was meeting this girl. Like, I want to make it right. I want to, like, you know, like pay you back and things like that, you know. So I have to, like, I come out to her that way, you know what I mean? And then she's like, the first time she heard it, she didn't flip out or whatever. She was just giving me like a paragraph of like, you know, Islamic things, like, you know, it's not right, you know I might not care, but your uncle in, you know, in there, what
is... So your family are all Muslims?
Yeah, my family Muslim, born Muslim. Yeah, when you're Malay, you're originally, like, you can't run away from it. That's the thing about Malaysia, because even if you want to denounce your religion, you can't. And they will persecute you according to the religion you were born into. The thing about what they like to say about LGBT is like, oh, go away, like, you're not Muslim. But then you want to punish, they want to punish us using the religion. So it's like, let us denounce so you don't have to punish me. And it's like, no way, you can't denounce. So what the hell is that? Amazing. You know, and then when you are prosecuted under Sharia law, the only person that can represent you is Sharia lawyers. And Sharia lawyers cannot defend you because they will lose their license. So how does that even...
It's pretty unfair all in all, really, isn't
like
it?
The system just you're not going to get out of it.
So your mum wasn't best pleased then? She took it hard, did she?
Well, if I compare notes, you know, there are some people who like disown, you know, and things like that. So my mum trying her best, like for example, like my partner whenever she was back in Malaysia. So the way my mom like accepted is like cook for her, accept her to my to our home, and talk to her nicely, you know. And that is the level of acceptance for her. Yeah. So she doesn't disown me, but still, you know, she doesn't want to know like if you fight, or how's your relationship, you know, like things like that. Are you gonna have kids? Nah. Yeah. So that's the level of acceptance that
And what would she? How would she react if you got married, for example?
She doesn't know.
I did get married. Oh, right. Okay. Rewind. Okay. So you're married. Congratulations.
Thank you. 2018 in Ireland. Yeah. My partner is from Northern Ireland originally, but she also have Irish passport. And then we thought like, you know, if we don't know if we're going to be together for how long, you know, but we thought it was the best thing to do because at the time there was conversation around Brexit. So we're like, oh, okay, we better do it now. We don't know what else, what's going to happen. It's fine, but just we don't want to like look back and think, oh, we should have done that. Ireland, Republic of Ireland has been really great. Like, I don't have any problem with their... They were really fast. Whenever I have like appointment with Garda, they're just like, yep, okay, stamp your passport, where's your marriage certificate? All right, cool, pop, stamp, done.
And that must be a revelation to you, really.
The first month I was here, I was just like so surreal. Like, imagine if someone like hit me in the face because I'm gay. Like,
sorry, we got a fire. Can you evacuate down to the bottom?
Oh, right, yeah, okay, fine. Just recording.
sort of through recording, but I just, yeah, I need everybody.
All right, fair enough. Well, that's a first. Never had to stop a podcast interview because something's on fire. We're being evacuated. Well, we can see some big flames on the other side of that hedge. I don't think it looks too bad. Oh, I don't know. We'll just go around this side of this giant pig scratching its belly.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm assuming you met your Irish wife in Malaysia then. What was she doing there?
Yeah. She left her job in London. She was in London for 8 years as a poet. And then she was actually dating another Malaysian. And she left her job because she was supposed to come and meet the Malaysian girlfriend. But before she left, they broke up.
Right.
But she got a grant from British Council to do spoken word in Malaysia for a month. Ooh. So we had a mutual friend from Singapore. She always booked my band back in Malaysia to play in Singapore. In London, she squatted with my partner. And she said, oh, it's okay, never mind, you just go and meet this queer band, KL, Kuala Lumpur band. So she came to our band practice, and I was single for two months at the time. And she said, oh, I'm going to this place for my show tonight. And I was like, no, you can't find the place. Like, let me drive you. Like, no hidden agenda or whatever. Right, no. Just like...
Yeah.
Just, and then we just clicked, you know.
Yeah.
We talk and things like that. And it just went on. Yeah.
And then was the reason of moving to Ireland because it would obviously be a lot easier for you as a couple? Was it? There was no way that you could have been a couple openly in Malaysia, could you, I guess?
To be honest, it's because of COVID. Mm. We were in Malaysia since 2016. Yeah. And we stayed there in, you know, doesn't matter the law and things like that, because we were also running our social centre and events and stuff like that. We always thought about, like, what's going to happen to us, you know? Mm. But I guess it never really sparked anything to us, like for us to like decide, let's go. Until COVID happened, she couldn't leave the country. The school kind of like didn't let her go off for like Christmas or things like that. And the only way she can do that was to leave. And then in Malaysia, if you work for school or whatever, and once you resign, you only have 7 days to leave. So at the time, in the middle of pandemic, the only reasons that a citizen can leave if you have a job overseas or if you have families or you're getting married. So these three. And because of marriage, it's not even, you know, legal in Malaysia. So I couldn't apply under that.
Mm.
So we went and talked to Irish ambassador in Kuala Lumpur. Mm. And she was very nice. She was like, here's a letter for you, a big letter for you, saying that you have the rights to our residency. If anything, just call me with my passport and things like that. So I just took my chance. I just like apply, because there's this thing where you have to apply. I just applied, and then a week later I got it approved.
And wow,
I was
and like, you weren't even married then. You were like,
I don't know. Yeah. We were married already. That's why the Irish ambassador saw like our certificate and said, okay, I can do that for you. And I understand that in here you can't do anything with that, you know.
Ooh.
So she gave me a supporting letter saying that yes, whenever your citizen going to Ireland, she will be fine, you know. So she gave that guarantee, and then the government was like, yeah, sure. And then I quickly bought my ticket and left. So to be honest, it's because of COVID.
Yeah.
But it was a good thing to do as well. So now I start my, you know, Irish towards Irish citizenship process, which I can only leave the country 6 weeks per year for 3 years. So I'm on my second year now.
Yeah, so you're going to become Irish.
Yeah.
And how does that feel? You must miss Malaysia a bit, though.
Yeah, I do miss Malaysia, friends and things like that. Mm. But I guess the country is also, you know, struggling politically, economically and things like that. So I went back for a month last month. It was nice to see friends and stuff like that, but I could feel like some things doesn't get better in the country. So I'm still rooting something will change. You know, but in the meantime, I also need to do this for myself.
And is your mum happy for you?
I don't think so.
I think so.
You know, this thing where like Asian parents don't really like you leaving, you know. Yeah. It's very different from Western culture, you know, like you're 18, get out of my house. And but in Asian parents, it's like, why do you want to get out of my house? And you're already 30. They were like, I provide you food, I wash your clothes, why do you want to leave, you know? So I'm the first to go out of three of us, and I have two elder brothers. Yeah, so you know, for them it's like a bit of a shock. But I've been away from home for so long. When I was in boarding school for 6 years, and then I went for university away for 3 years, that was like my youth was like 9 years out of my house, my own home. So I never spent like more than 3 months at home since I was 13 to 22. So living is like, you know.
Independent woman. Yeah. So what advice would you have to anyone who may be listening in Malaysia or maybe in some of those other Middle Eastern countries that you mentioned where it's illegal to be gay? What advice would you give to them, people that might be, you know, question their sexuality or know that they're part of the LGBT community and are just afraid to come out?
I think it's very, very important for people who are still in countries that are illegal to be gay to be with each other and kind of support every initiative that your friends do. For example, if you're more on like policy, law and things like that, or you're doing parties, for example, I think parties are also important for you to meet people, or you have book clubs or things like, even small things like cooking club or brunch, you know. Keep that going and always support each other so that you have every department that you can grow together. I guess like that's what's happening in Malaysia as well, like people are playing their part. I think we should be caring, kind and supporting each other. That's very important, because to fight the big man is a big battle, you know.
Yeah. Well, it is, and I feel, not personally, but almost sort of like we are responsible in the West, you know, as you mentioned before, it was all the colonial laws. So what more can we be doing as LGBT people in the West to help people, you know, in the Far East or in the Middle East who are living in under these terrible draconian laws?
Well, the thing is, like, if from embassies help a lot. Monetary mostly, not really much on law and policy. But if you're on holiday, for example, maybe you can find LGBT, local LGBT networks to volunteer. Yeah, give your energy and time or ear and understanding, you know, strategy and things like that. I think that's what, well, people like normal, like everyday lives can do. It's not like a big change or whatever, but yeah, a bit by bit, you know.
Yeah. Grassroots change.
So grassroots is very important.
I mean, we are a one human race and everyone has their part to play, I believe. And even a small thing, reaching out to one LGBT person can really help people.
Representation is also important, giving platforms and things like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It's been really interesting and enlightening talking to you.
Thank you so much.
And best of luck with becoming Irish.
Oh, yeah. What's the crack?
The wonderful Yo-Yo speaking to me last summer from Elfest. What an incredible story, eh? And it's a really good reminder of how much we take for granted here in the West and how much there is still to fight for when it comes to LGBTQ rights across the globe. Hey, if you're listening and you're from a corner of the globe that we haven't covered yet and you'd like to tell your story, and it's safe for you to tell your story, please get in contact with us. You can do that via our website, comingoutstoriespodcast.com. Just click on the get in touch icon. We're also on all the socials, at Come Out Stories on Twitter and at Coming Out Stories Pod on Insta. We would love to hear from you. So wherever you're listening, I wish you a happy new year, and a year where it's not only safe to be yourself, a year where you're celebrated for being you. Here's to a better 2023 for all LGBTQ plus people across the globe. We'll be bringing you many more episodes in 2023, of course, and next up is Mark, an American travel writer who grew up near the Great Lakes in the 1980s, where he really struggled with feeling isolated.
And at first I thought, you know, when I first heard of the term gay, it was only applied to like, oh, you can't kick the football, so you're gay. And so I originally thought, like, okay, so gay means that you're not good at sports. You know, so it was confusing. And back then there was no internet, so I couldn't easily educate myself.